New to the living healthy lifestyle or a healthy living veteran, this is your place for honest answers.
Naturally Savvy.
With registered holistic nutritionist Andrea Donsky
and health journalist
Lisa Davis.
Hello, everybody. It's Andrea Donsky here from Naturally Savvy. And Lisa Davis, my amazing co-host, is off today. And today we have a very interesting guest, Dr. Rachna Patel, who is a doctor who's been practicing in the area of medical marijuana for over half a decade. And she walks her patients through how to use medical marijuana for their specific medical conditions without getting high off of it, and without getting addicted to it and without smoking it. So very interesting guest. Welcome to the show, Dr. Patel. And I'd love to just jump right in.
Sure. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right, so tell us, you know, what exactly, I mean, obviously, you know, in my intro, I explain what you do, but tell us a little bit about what an important practice of medicine this is.
It's important because, well, let me go into a little bit of the background as to why I'm doing what I'm doing, and that'll lend to answer your question. So my background's in emergency medicine, but what I saw as a training in the area of emergency medicine were a couple of things, a couple of cases that actually sat really heavy with me. One was that I was seeing a lot of overdoses on opioid medications. Second was that I was seeing a lot of drug seekers coming into the emergency room seeking opioids. And then I did a rotation, a toxicology rotation, where my main purpose was to treat overdoses on over-the-counter and prescription medications. And so I took a step back, big picture. My whole purpose as a physician was to help people, but the very prescription medications that I was writing prescriptions for, these patients were coming back having been harmed by these medications. So one of the things that I knew was that we don't have a good solution for chronic pain, and that's what sort of turned me on to medical marijuana.
So you use the medical marijuana to help people cope with their pain that they're experiencing in their body. And it could be any type of pain, right? It could be headache pain. It could be chronic pain. It could be a pain that they can, you know, explain a little bit about the pain itself.
Sure. So specifically, it's chronic pain. And within the category of pain, the most common conditions of pain that I treat are fibromyalgia, arthritis, back pain, whether, you know, the person has a herniated disc, whether they have degenerative disc disease, a wide variety of sort of etiologies of back pain. And then what else? Migraines are another common condition that I treat as well. Patients who have multiple sclerosis, I treat where medical marijuana works well for them is when they have spasms, very severe spasms that cause them a lot of pain.
And where are you based? So if people are listening and they're like, they want to know exactly how they can contact you or how they can work with you, what can you give them some information about how to connect?
Sure. So I'm based in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, out in California. And currently, I'm only seeing patients locally, but I do put out quite a bit of information on my YouTube channel, as well as my Facebook page. I'm always doing Facebook Live videos there to answer some of the very commonly asked questions that I get about medical marijuana. So that's one way to reach me.
I think that's great. Okay, so let's go into the legalities of it. I mean, of course, we're doing an interview on medical marijuana. A question that some people might have is, you know, is it legal and how does it work if your state doesn't allow marijuana to be used? Explain a little bit about that.
Sure. So basically, it falls into two categories in terms of legalization. There are states that have legalized marijuana for recreational use, and there's eight different states that have done this. And then there are states that have legalized marijuana for medical use. So for recreational use, basically, it's just like walking into a liquor store. As long as you meet a certain minimum age requirement, you are free to purchase, whatever you'd like. Whereas in a state where it's legalized for medical use, you do need to see a physician. The physician does need to evaluate you and then deem your condition as benefiting from the use of medical marijuana. And then what happens is one of two things. In a state like California, the physician issues paperwork, and then you can just go to a dispensary and purchase the medical marijuana products. Or in most other states, what happens is that you have to submit the paperwork to the state. And then the state typically has a physician that works for the state. And then it's basically an extra set of eyes that looks over the paperwork and okays everything. And then you get your card through the state. And this is how it works in the vast majority of cases. So that's the process in all the different types of states that have legalized marijuana.
Now, you said, you know, we said in the beginning in your intro that you help people, but they're not smoking it. So how do people, if they wanted to use medical marijuana, how is it administered?
A wide variety of ways. So typically, I don't recommend to patients that they smoke marijuana because it is doing damage to your lungs in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a wide variety of different options available. So there's a process of inhalation known as vaporization. And essentially, mm-hmm. what this does is that it heats the plant material rather than burning it. So what you're avoiding is a combustion reaction and that pollution, essentially, that's created with burning something. This, essentially, the vaporizer just heats whatever's in it. So on the plant, the chemicals are housed in a resinous material. Essentially, it's an oil. And when you put it in a vaporizer and you heat it up, that oil evaporates, and that's essentially what you're inhaling. So it is healthier compared to smoking marijuana. The other option is are tinctures. Tinctures are drops mm-hmm. that you put under the tongue. So essentially, it's a liquid version of marijuana. Then there's also edibles. Typically, these are chocolates and gummies, although the industry has evolved enough where there are very healthy options available, like gluten-free options, sugar-free options, vegan options as well. And then there are topical formulations of marijuana. So basically, this is marijuana that comes in the form of a salve, of an ointment, and you basically apply it to the affected area. Then there's also vaginal and rectal formulations of marijuana as well. Those I recommend more rarely. It's always on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm. For those of us who are newer to the term or to the, you know, to the procedure or to the process, how are they taking it, but how are they not getting high from it? How is the CBD, or I guess it's the CBD removed from the THC removed from the CBD. Explain a little bit about what it is that they're taking to help relieve their pain, but not getting high at the same time.
Sure. So there's a couple different components to this. One is based on the combination of chemicals that you're using in the product that you purchase. So marijuana makes a whole bunch of different chemicals, but there are two that it makes in high concentrations, THC and CBD. And of the two, THC is a psychoactive compound. So as you can imagine, if you use a product that's really, really high in THC and you use it in excess amounts, it will give you a psychoactive effect. It will get you high. So one is a combination of chemicals. And like I mentioned, if you use excess amounts. So the other part of it is that every medication, just in general, has a subtherapeutic range. Okay, that's a dosing, that's a dose that you're taking that's not effective. Then there's a toxic range, right, where the dose that you're taking is causing you now adverse effects. And then there's a therapeutic range, and that's typically where you want to fall, where you're getting the medical benefits, but you're not getting the side effects. And what we've seen is that we've seen that marijuana be used recreationally, and typically that a lot of that involves overuse. So you fall within that toxic range of dosing, and that's when you're likely to get side effects from the marijuana, like the high, for example. So a couple different components that factor into it.
Now, is this safe for children as well, or is there a specific age group that you help people with?
So I have treated children as young as six for a couple of reasons. One, our group of patients who have epilepsy, and they're getting seizures mm-hmm. so often that they're on prescription medications and that, you know, pretty much sedate them, and that's the only way to avoid having these seizures. And then the second group of patients, young patients that I treat, are those with autism, because a big component of autism is anxiety. Typically with these patients, one of the behaviors that manifests is you need to have a certain routine. And if you break from that routine, it causes these patients a lot of anxiety. So that's the aspect of autism that I'm treating. You know, a lot of it is being very careful about teaching parents how to dose the marijuana, how to watch for side effects of the marijuana as well. So there's a big component of that factors into it as well.
What are some of those side effects?
Side effects can include dizziness, heart racing, paranoia, anxiety, and then grogginess or feeling fatigued, feeling tired. And again, this is typically if you're overdoing it.
And is that because of too much CBD?
So it depends. So the side effects of grogginess and fatigue are typically attributed to CBD. The side effects of dizziness, heart racing, paranoia, and anxiety are typically attributed to the THC. So it just depends which chemical you're overdoing.
And, you know, when you're working with these patients, you find that they see a huge improvement, or is it, I guess you talked about, I've seen, you know, the reports on children with epilepsy. And so what is it in the CBD and the small amounts of THC that's actually helping to curb their symptoms?
So are you talking about specifically patients with epilepsy?
No, just in general. So yeah, definitely, you know, epilepsy,
general.
The children with autism, but just in general. I mean, we know we talk about pain, but, you know, let's talk about the epilepsy for a second, and then we can move on to some of the other ones.
Sure. So typically with epilepsy, it's the CBD that helps. And here's the thing. When it comes to what it's actually doing in the body, we don't have much research on it. Clinically, what I've seen is that it does a couple of things with seizures. One is that it reduces the duration of the seizures. Second is that it reduces the frequency of the seizures. So what happens is that when you reduce the duration and the frequency of the seizures, there's a greater period of time in between where patients are able to interact in a normal way with their environment, which is very important to the development of a child. What happens with prescription medications is that a lot of these medications for seizures are very sedating. And so though these patients may not be having seizures, you know, in between they're spending a lot of their day sleeping, they're groggy, they're tired, so they're not interacting, in a normal way with their environment, and that can then impact their development. Now, in general, like for instance, let's take chronic pain. What I've seen is that a couple things. I've seen patients be able to come off of their prescription medications completely. Wow. Second scenario is that they still continue to take their prescription medications, but they're on fewer prescription medications, or they've been able to significantly reduce the dosages of these prescription medications. So those are the two of the best case scenarios. And then third case scenario is that they're taking the same number of prescription medications, same dosages and whatnot, but the medical marijuana is to reduce their pain even more. Anxiety is another very common condition that I treat. Typically the results that I see in these patients is that it helps to reduce the panic attacks that patients are having. In my best case scenarios, patients report that, you know, it helps to eliminate the panic attacks completely. And an example of this are patients that are experiencing PTSD, especially patients that are veterans. One of the components of adjusting back to civilian life is no longer having to be hypervigilant, but they find themselves especially when they're in large crowds, feeling really hypervigilant. So it's really difficult for them to be in large crowds, and a lot of times they end up, you know, sort of self-isolating themselves. So with this patient population specifically, what I hear is that, you know, I'm able to be more comfortable in crowds without having that feeling of being hypervigilant. And then the other most common condition that I treat is insomnia. And typically with these patients, what I find is that they report back to me that they're able to fall asleep easily. A lot of times patients will say that they're, you know, as soon as they get into bed, their mind starts to race and they can't shut it down. So it helps with that aspect. Then patients are able to stay asleep. And then specifically the patients that wake up frequently during the night, you know, for whatever reason, they find that they're able to fall back asleep easily. And the main difference between prescription medications and the marijuana is that patients are able to wake up feeling refreshed, as opposed to feeling groggy or that quote unquote hungover feeling.
I wonder if it's working on people's adrenal glands, especially when it comes to anxiety, because we know that, you know, if we have trouble sleeping or if you're waking up in the middle of the night and you can't fall back asleep, a lot of it has to do with the stress, you know, our overstressed adrenal glands. So would it have some type of positive effect on our adrenal glands?
I'm not certain. I know that it is, when it comes to anxiety, it does work in the serotonin pathway. There's this receptor called 5-HT1A. I think that's the name of it. That's the main receptor that it interacts with to help to reduce anxiety. But again, there's a lot more that we need to know. But as far as I know, the research shows that it's through the serotonin pathway that it helps with anxiety.
Now, one of the things that people might be thinking is this something that I would become addicted to? So what, you're saying that it helps people sleep and it's, you know, doing all these wonderful things. Is it something that people can easily go off of, or is it something that they might need long term?
Sure. So big picture is that it all depends on how you're using the marijuana. And I like to liken it to alcohol use. So if you're someone that drinks wine on a nightly basis, versus someone who has, you know, like a case of beer a night, then you're more likely to get addicted to the case of beer versus a glass of wine a night, right? And so heavy users are with when it comes to marijuana, heavy users are more likely to get addicted. And research has shown that in heavy users, and these are users that admitted to using marijuana specifically to get high, the proportion of people that became addicted was 9%. Now, it is a lot less than alcohol and even tobacco. The number for alcohol is 14%, whereas the number for tobacco is about 24%.
Wow.
So even in heavy users, there is a small likelihood of addiction, yes. But again, it comes down to how you use it. And what I found clinically, when patients are using it specifically for medical reasons, they typically only need to use it about once in a day. And they don't need to use it on an everyday basis. And there's a scientific reason behind this, which is that marijuana it's fat soluble. It gets stored in the fat cells in your body, right? So even on the days you're not taking it, essentially as you're burning off your fat cells, the chemicals are still getting released, and it's still helping you.
So for some people, they could take it, you know, once every few days kind of thing, and it would still work.
Yep, exactly.
Interesting. So what type of criticism do you come in contact with, if any?
Over the years, I've been encountering less and less criticism. So as an example, when I first opened up my practice, one of the things that you do when you've started a practice is that you go around and introduce your practice to other physicians in the area. And I could not get past the office manager. People were not open to it. And I opened up my practice a couple years ago, 2014, but, you know, in a span of 2 to 3 years, a lot has changed. Now the interesting thing is that I now get referrals from physicians. Sometimes I haven't even met these physicians, and yet they're still referring to me. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the fact that I've also over the course of the past year, I've been putting out a lot of information. A lot of it is research-based. On my YouTube channel, on my blog. So I'm sure that has a lot to do with it as well. But other than that, I personally have not faced a lot of criticism. Patients are really appreciative of what I do. There's certainly other physicians that are appreciative of what I do because, you know, they're working in a system that, you know, even though they'd like to, it doesn't allow them to create the documentation for patients.
And do people have to go through a medical doctor could any medical doctor prescribe it, or does it, they have to go to someone like yourself who specializes in it?
So basically what the rules and regulations state is that any physician that's licensed to practice in the state of California can issue a what's called a recommendation. But that doesn't always happen, especially in systems that if physicians that are working for systems where they're receiving federal funding, because that's in direct conflict with what's stated in the Controlled Substances Act. says that marijuana is a class one substance. Physicians right. cannot issue a prescription for it. So a lot of times that's the reason why physicians are referring to me, because they themselves are you know, from a place of employment are prohibited from issuing the recommendation, so they'll refer over to me.
So before we end, what would you say, are there any questions that you commonly get, one or two questions that you feel you want to share with our audience that maybe I haven't covered today?
Yeah, so one of the things is that I always get patients telling me that, you know, I want to use the medical marijuana, but I'm not looking to gain weight, right? So these are patients that may have used the marijuana back in high school and college, and they may have experienced what are called the munchies. So,
right.
Again, a lot of this has to do with the combination of chemicals that you select and how much of it you're using. So the main chemical that stimulates appetite is THC. So if you overdo the THC, then you are likely to experience that stimulation in appetite. Now, for most patients, it's an undesired side effect, but for a lot of patients, for instance, that are undergoing chemotherapy, where their appetite gets very, very suppressed, it's actually advantageous to have that stimulation in appetite. So that's one of the common concerns. We address the addiction part of it. We address not wanting to smoke marijuana. Let's see. Those are sort of the main concerns that come up when patients come to see me.
And if people want to learn more about you, do you have a website they can go to, or social media handles that they can find you at?
Sure. So my website, which is www.dr, which is abbreviated DR, Rachna, R-A-C-H-N-A, Patel, P-A-T-E-L.com. And then listeners can also reach me through my YouTube channel. And if you just Google YouTube, the medical marijuana expert, I'm always putting up videos on there to answer commonly asked questions, and I always encourage viewers to post their questions in the comments section, and I do eventually get to answering them. Same with my Facebook page. Every 1 to 2 weeks, I do a Facebook Live video, again, answering right. commonly asked questions. So that's another way to get more information from you as well.
Thank you, Dr. Patel. I think it's very interesting. And I do want to, before we leave, I just want to thank today's sponsor. It's Maddie's Healthy Products, for their sponsoring us so that we can have shows and amazing guests like you talk about important topics. So thank you, Maddie's Healthy Products, for being Naturally Savvy sponsor today. Well, Dr. Patel, thank you so much. This has been really interesting and very eye-opening for me. And we will be sharing this with everybody. So thank you for being a guest on our show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm Andrea Donsky, along with Lisa Davis, who isn't here today, but she'll be back next time. And you're listening to Naturally Savvy Radio. Like us on all social media at Naturally Savvy, at Andrea Donsky, at Radio MD, and at Health Media Gal 1. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay well.